Today's program has been brought to you by Hearst Ranch, the nation's largest single-source supplier of free-range, all-natural, grass-fed, and grass-finished beef. For more information, visit HearstRanch.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit HeritageRadioNetwork.org for thousands more.
Good afternoon, everybody. It's 5 o'clock and it's Wednesday, and if it's 5 o'clock and it's Wednesday, you're listening to Phil Colicchio bringing you the business of the business here on the Heritage Radio Network. The business of the business is the show that explores the hospitality industry, the business side of the industry. Sometimes it's restaurants, sometimes it's hotels, sometimes it's service, sometimes it's the ancillary businesses that support those projects. As I mentioned, we broadcast every week at 5 o'clock, and you can hear us on www.heritageradionetwork.org. If you miss the show live, every once in a while, my friends miss the show live. It's very rare, but when they do, they can go to the archive on heritageradionetwork.org, click on the business of the business, and they can listen to any one of the 29 or so archive shows that we have. You can also pick us up as a podcast on iTunes. So now that we've got that little bit of business out of the way, we can get down to the real business of the business. Folks, if you listen to the show here and there, hello outside. If you listen to the show on a regular basis, you know that I do focus a great deal on restaurants and the beauty of the restaurant business. It is a glorious business at its best. It's a beautiful business at its best. And restaurant spaces themselves are often true works of art. The glamour and the glory of restaurant spaces are usually reserved for designers. The great big names out there like Adam Tahani and David Rockwell and Peter Bentel, these are multiple award winners, internationally renowned designers. They're the pretty boy quarterbacks of the design team. They're the ones you think of first when you see a striking design or an incredibly elegant space. But you know, it's the contractor who is the real left tackle of that business. The guy who protects the quarterback's blind side. The guy that really makes or breaks that design team. And the contractor needs to be managed, needs to be coached. Well, I've got the Bill Belichick of the restaurant design industry sitting here with me today, Mr. Brian Stise of the Stise Hospitality Initiative. Welcome to the show, Brian.
Thanks, Phil. Great to be here.
I had to give you a New England nod, you traitorous bastard.
Well, I didn't bring Aaron Hernandez with me, so I'm all set.
Brian is a transplanted northern New Jersey boy who makes his home in the Boston area. And Brian and I have known each other for quite some time, have worked on a number of projects together. And I think I've earned the right to tease him a little bit about his traitorous activity by switching over to the Boston side. But for today, we'll forgive him. Brian, let's get into it, because you have worked on some of the most amazing projects that this city has ever seen. But your work is not known the way Adam Tahani is known or Rockwell is known. Tell the audience what it is that Stye's Hospitality Initiative actually does. Who do they work for? And we'll talk about how it adds incredible value, but you know, you're not a contractor.
No, I was a contractor, but as of 2 years ago, I stopped acting as a contractor and now manage the contractor.
Right.
So my role, and I'm hired by the client, by the end user in most cases, is to help be the conductor of the orchestra for them, for lack of a better term.
I was going with a whole football theme here, and now you move into orchestras.
Well, I wanted to stay away from the from the football thing because then we might get into a Giants-Patriots argument. So
no argument there.
Yeah, I was there. But anyway, so really we take the whole team from the budget side, from the kitchen design side, from the architecture, the engineering, the lease review, and try to get the front end, the old adage, planning.
Right.
And
right.
So you have to have a plan. And what we do is help set up the plan and then initiate the plan and then execute the plan. And that means getting all the teammates together, putting them in the design mode, and then working that through, continually monitoring budget and design.
Right.
And ultimately hiring a contractor to be the builder, protecting the client from the contractor and, costs and all that kind of stuff. Getting the city and having permits and all that kind of stuff coordinated, and then finally turning the project over and making sure that it functions correctly.
Now, you've done this all over the world, certainly not just New York. And we occasionally get New York-centric here. We sort of have to. But you've done this, for on your own as the initiative for a couple of years, but I know that you've done it before. Let's talk about that team. When you get started, when we talk to other restaurateurs, especially on this show, we actually focus on the whole concept of the external non-culinary team, mm-hmm. right? Which is so critical at the outset, at what we can call the pre-opening phase, right?
Sure.
So that team is usually who?
Well, you have your architect, you've got your kitchen equipment designer, you've got potentially a AV consultant, audiovisual, sound. You've got your MEP engineer, mechanical, electrical, and plumbing engineer.
And by the way, just even though it may sound as if we're just talking about the $15 million kind of build-out, I mean, we're talking these kind of consultants are involved in even – smaller build-outs and refits, right?
Yeah. I mean, one of the things I learned in the construction side of this early on is whether you're doing a $20 million job or a $300,000 job, you have the same amount of moving parts on every job. They may be smaller moving parts, but they're the same. So getting that to work together and putting it all together is very, difficult because you've got 16 to 20 subcontractors.
Right.
You have 4 to 5 consultants.
Right.
You've got the owner's team and the owner's vendors that are supplying things like tables and chairs and plates and pots and, potentially lighting or kitchen equipment that's on the owner side of the contract. So you've got the same amount of people. I mean, I just did Ellery's Green on Carmine Street, 1,500 square feet. It's the same amount of people I had up at Yonkers Raceway where I just did Pinch and Dan Rooney's Pub, which were 20,000 feet.
See, it's... That's a great observation and an important observation. I think, again, people who listen to the show, they're interested in the business side, that component. So just as an example, what percentage of restaurant owners do you know that can handle a build-out project on their own?
That's a hard thing to quantify on percentage. Because if it's their first restaurant, they may have a lot of capacity because they have nothing else going on.
Right.
My argument to most owners is, do what you do best and let me do what I do best and you'll be more successful. If you have 3 restaurants...
Don't give yourself your own heart surgery, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
If you have 3 restaurants and you're spending 75% of your time building your next restaurant, and you're not managing your three restaurants, you're losing money on the three.
Yeah.
So run the three and have someone.
Well, have you? Let's say have you, because what you don't want, of course, is to hire, you know, your wife's cousin, or your wife or your husband's wife's cousin, right, or something like that. The component is that there aren't a lot of people out there who do what you do. Let's tell the audience as an example. I know that by giving you numbers, I'm probably throwing you off, but some of the restaurateurs and national restaurant groups that you've worked for. Mm-hmm. I know that you have worked for instance, Andrew Carmelini.
Okay.
And I know that you've worked for P.F. Chang's,
mm-hmm.
right? So along that line, you have just name some of the groups that you've worked with that are really different in.
Yeah, well, over my career on both construction and on the project management side, I've worked for Cheesecake Factory, California Pizza Kitchen, P.F. Chang's, as you said, Nobu, Hard Rock.
Monsters.
Hard Rock.
Right, monsters.
Yeah.
And then on the other side,
I've worked
more intimate groups.
Ellery's Green, which is a one-time all-natural foods on Carmine Street, as I said. I've worked for Jeffrey Zakarian on his one, at that point, his one restaurant or second restaurant when it was at the Carlton Hotel. I've worked for you know, small time, you know, back when it was Legal Seafoods, and I was working on like their third unit, and now they have 34 units.
I mean, hell, you came out to Princeton, New Jersey, happily, to talk to a guy who wanted to create a diner. So, I mean, I've seen what you do at the highest levels, and I've seen what you do at the most intimate levels, which is the way that's the word I use for small.
Okay.
All right, intimate. So all of those levels are very important to the hospitality industry. When you began in this business, I mean, did you ever imagine that you would be this broadly in demand?
No, it was it's been a wild ride.
Go back to the beginning.
Well, in 1993, when I started at my former place of employment, Shawmut Design and Construction, you know, we had
a wonderful outfit.
Great outfit. Right. We had $30 million in volume, and the then founder of the company said, "I want to build a national business of doing restaurants and retail." And he said, "Can you figure it out?" And I thought, you know, wow, if I could, you know, get out of Boston, maybe I could do something in Providence or maybe Hartford, Connecticut. You know, in about 6 years' time, we were working in Vegas and had an office in Washington, D.C., and we were in Chicago. And then 4 years later, we're doing work for Morton's in Singapore and Kowloon, and we're doing work in Las Vegas at some of the biggest casino projects and going on. And
how did you pull that off? And I'm saying it with a sense of wonder, because it's, you know, Shawmut's is a good sized company, but Shawmut is not IBM.
No, it was.
Ava, you're going all around the world doing project planning and basically cracking the whip.
Yeah, it was. You know what? There was no model to follow, so we sort of made our own model. And a lot of it was based on treating people right. You know, walking the walk was one of our core values. Taking calculated risk was another of our core values. Right. And really executing that and treating people with respect. I remember when I first came to New York and I was doing a project for FAO Schwartz at the GM building. And the project manager for FAO Schwartz had this policy of joint checks.
Mm-hmm.
And we were like, okay, whatever it takes, you know, we are a very flexible company. We'll do whatever you want to do. And so when he would give us the checks, I'd call the subs up and say, "Hey, I got your check, come down and get it." And I remember our roofing contractor saying to me, "No one's ever called me and said, come get a check. They usually tell me the check's in the mail. I have to check with the accounting department."
Right.
And our policy was pay people and treat them like you'd treat your own employees. Our subcontractors were our employees. Yeah. And so we treated them really professionally and like they were valued assets, and they were. That's how we got things built.
Right.
And so when we came to New York, we weren't a real New York contractor in the true
no,
terms.
No, you weren't.
We were, and that helped flourish our growth. I mean, people were like, "Wow, we want to work for you guys."
Yeah, it's a bit unusual to hear somebody say, "I came to New York from out of town, and was able to successfully navigate the New York code system and the New York infrastructure." But you guys did because you walked the walk. You talked the talk. Let me move a little bit because there's a restaurateur or a would-be restaurateur who's saying, "Gosh, I'm thinking about, you know, I'm thinking about expanding, or I'm thinking about bringing a new concept to the table, and it's highly designed." All right, how do you and the people who do what you do, and there are only a few, and there are even fewer good ones, but how do you charge a client?
Well, I don't believe in a retainer based concept as a contract as my consulting business. So I don't want people to invite me to meetings because I'm on retainer and they want to talk about colors. And since they're paying me, they want me to be there anyway. So I design my business different than most of my competitors, the ones that are out there. And I try to say, listen, during the pre-construction, on the planning process, mm-hmm. pay me on an hourly, not to exceed basis, monthly basis, and invite me to meetings where I can add value. You know, help me, let me review your lease and try to save you money. Let me help you get the right people on your team and get the synergy. I mean, so much about restaurants is the synergy and the karma of building that team together. And I'm not a big, you know, karma guy, but I do believe if you work with people you like, projects go better.
You know, with your shaved head and ponytail and flowing robes, I would have thought you were a karma guy.
I'll take my bathrobe off.
Right. but what I do know is that in projects that I've worked on with you, There's been a great value add early on that really puts a restaurant operator and owner at ease, and that is when you jump in on the lease evaluations at the beginning. That's a very helpful component because you're doing it as somebody who is not going to make any money off of that review. You're going to go through the construction side. You're going to help evaluate the insurance components. I mean, to me, that shows a good business sense. It said, I'm going to immediately add value to my client, even my potential client, without really charging them anything. So, and I know you're very, where did you gain that familiarity with lease review? Because last time I checked, you don't have a law degree.
I don't have a law degree, but I have had continuing ed credits. I've lectured for continuing ed credits for lawyers at several conferences.
I know you have.
But I learned it by going through it and just self-taught. I'm an engineer by education. But, you know, I always had the theory and I had great tutelage when I was in college from a mentor of mine, a guy named Saul Fern, who I have the greatest admiration for. But I always believed that value every client like they're your biggest client. And Saul used to teach us that, and that everybody is the most important. And again, I got to reflect upon Saul, because when Saul – I went to his retirement party when I was very young. I was like 23, 24. And every client got up and said, I thought I was his only client.
Wow.
And that's how I've tried to treat all of my clients, is they're my only client, because you never know who's going to be the next – you know, in my world, Roger Berkowitz or Ned Grace or, you know,
Danny Meyer. All right.
Yeah.
Exactly. No, I completely get it.
Yeah. You talked about the diner in Philly. I went down there with the thought that I want him to be successful, because it's a lot easier to work with the same people. So I want everybody to be successful so I can do repeat work for them. And so my whole thing is I want everybody to be successful. I'm going to pour my heart and soul into the one-time operator or the 100-time operator, because you never know when the one-time operator will soon be your 100-time operator.
Well, I must tell you that some of what you're saying, I might, if I didn't know you, if I hadn't seen you crawl through ducts to shout out whether or not you felt they were in good working order, I might say that these are platitudes and that you're kind of, you know, you're saying what anybody would say. But I've seen you do it. I'm here with Brian Stise, the owner of Stye's Hospitality Initiative. We're going to take the initiative right now to take a little sponsors break. When we come back, Brian's promised me that he would let it loose and would tell us about some of the epic successes and failures that we have seen in this business in New York. And we might even name some names, but if we don't name the names, you know, we'll speak in accents, so that will maybe give it away. This is Phil Colicchio. You're listening to The Business of the Business on the HeritageRadioNetwork.org. We'll be back in a minute.
Hearst Ranch grass-fed beef, pasture-raised on 150,000 acres in Central California. Hearst Ranch grass-fed beef, free-range, sustainably produced, humane. Hearst Ranch grass-fed beef, the authentic flavor of the American West.
That's right. Hearst Ranch-fed beef is the authentic flavor of the American West. We even know that in Brooklyn, New York. I want to thank the Punch Brothers for providing us with our theme music from their album, Who's Feeling Young Now? That's Movement and Location. The Punch Brothers will be putting a new album out shortly. As you know, if you're a regular listener to the show, I believe they will change your life if you go to see them play. Five incredible musicians who seem to wander underneath the radar screen sometimes, but one of our missions here on The Business of the Business is to enhance your life, and the Punch Brothers will do that. I'm here with Brian Stye's of the Stye's Hospitality Initiative. Among other nicknames for Brian, Coach Belichick is one. Hey, you is another. I call him Mr. Wolf. Those of you who have seen the Quentin Tarantino film Pulp Fiction might know that Harvey Keitel played the role of Mr. Wolf, who was the cleaner. When things went wrong, you called Mr. Wolf, who basically told you to get out of his way, come back in an hour, and everything would be fine. Just leave the envelope under the door. Brian is often called in to fix messes, particularly in this great big city where people spend a great deal of money to design spaces that sometimes defy practicality. Brian, let's get into it, because you've seen it all. What's the biggest mess that you got called in to fix? It doesn't have to be in New York. But.
No. Well, there's two big ones in New York that come to mind. Both.
This is the part, folks who listen to this show, I have to tell you, this is the part that I love, because I get called in to fix things too. And it's very rare that you can have a beer with somebody who principally says, boy, I helped this so-and-so pull the chestnuts out of the fire, and nobody is ever going to know it except me.
There's no glory in fixing someone else's mistake.
No.
Actually, it in both cases, it burnt out a lot of my staff members when I had to, run in and fix it. And I forget what movie was on the other night, but they talk about, when there's a fire, some people run away and I run in.
Right.
And, again, in the spirit of I want everybody to be successful, when a client's in trouble, even if I hadn't done the project for them and they say, can you help me?
Of course you do.
I help them.
Of course you do. It's your nature.
A lot of times it's I shouldn't say a lot of times. Quite often I'll do it as just let me give you some free advice because I think you're a good friend and we have a great relationship and I want you to get out of trouble.
And you're an industry dog. I mean, you're in the industry.
Yeah.
You don't leave people drowning in the middle of the lake.
Right. But two projects in particular that were disasters that we got brought in to bail out. One was the renovation of the Carlton Hotel, which I talked about before.
Yeah, you didn't talk out here, though.
And then the other one was the Greenwich Hotel.
Let's talk about the Carlton I want to talk about the Carlton first briefly,
mm-hmm.
because I want to finish with what became a great success.
Sure.
You know, I mean, both became successes, but the Greenwich is clearly a more intriguing story to me. Go ahead.
So which one you want to talk about? The Carlton
first? Yeah.
Well, the Carlton, originally, there was another contractor involved, and I was friendly with one of the investors in the restaurant that was going into the Carlton, and they asked me just to come down and review.
What was the restaurant?
It was, back then it was called Country.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's a Jeffrey's Arcarian.
Correct. And, as opposed to town.
Right.
And they said, can you come down? And it wasn't Jeffrey, but it was his mm-hmm. one of his investors. Mm-hmm. Can you come down and take a look at the drawings? Take a look at what's going on here. We don't feel good. And so I did. I went down and I started reviewing stuff, and it nothing added up. It didn't make any sense to me. The project was way behind schedule. It was way out of work was being way out of sequence. There was sheetrock going up, and the roof wasn't tied in, so the sheetrock was getting wet. And it was just a disaster. And they had kitchen pricing at that point that I was really focusing on that made no sense whatsoever.
And when you say kitchen pricing, you mean the kitchen equipment that's gone and the installation of the kitchen equipment.
Correct.
And how that – again, how you price it. And right.
Yeah, it just didn't make any sense. Historically, the numbers didn't make any sense.
Was somebody getting rich off of a bad plan, or was there just a bad plan and everybody was getting hurt?
I think it was a bad plan with a lot of, if you leave a lot of openings, people have to fill them in.
Yeah.
And they can make the wrong assumptions.
Yep.
So I don't think anybody was trying to get over on anybody. But what was happening is the responsible party for paying, which was the property owner, was paying a lot more than he should have ever paid for. And I didn't know the building owner, but I said to him, you're paying way too much, and let me try to help you. And so I did. And then, a couple weeks went by, and the building owner came back and said, I'd really like you to take over the project. And I'm like, no, taking over someone else's problems is really, in the construction world, really ugly. It's expensive. And he said, I said, no, I'll help you. I'll give you my time. I want you to be successful, and we'll go through it. And then 3 weeks later, I got another phone call. You have to meet with me. You have to take over this project. And I went down to their office. I met with them, and they said, you have to take over this project. And we did. And it was, what I found out later was we were the third contractor in. The first one had unfortunately taken money and run. The second guy, who were nice people, but they were way over their head, as a project that they shouldn't have been doing. And they were behind, and the subs were all sideways. And then we took it over, and I brought in a lot of staff, and we finally – figured it out and finished it.
And what was the key? I mean,
the key is being organized. Right. I mean, the biggest thing about being in the construction side or building a project is having a plan, like I said before, and being organized.
Right.
Being unorganized is no way to complete a project because you'll never get done on time. You're never going to control your budget.
Yeah.
And the GC that was there had no plan and no organization.
Well, let's move to the Greenwich Hotel, because I remember when you first told me about it, and in full disclosure, Andrew Carmelini and Josh Picard and Kenny Friedman, who are involved in the La Conda Verde restaurant, are friends and clients, so I've got a soft spot for all of them. But the owner of that project was a surprisingly hands-on guy, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Who is that owner?
Am I allowed to say?
Yeah, that owner, he got another die. He's got a day job, right?
Well, both of them have. There's two owners in that project.
Yeah, two owners.
And
but,
One has many hotels in Boston, and one in New York, and one has many movies.
Yeah, yeah. So that De Niro fella.
Yeah, that's him.
Yeah. So tell me about working with Robert De Niro.
Well,
on a construction project.
Well, Robert.
Very few people can. Have this conversation.
Well,
so go ahead.
Well, Robert is a very hands-on guy. I mean, he's a very heavy player in the Nobu concept, which I had done many units for him, including San Diego, Dallas, New York City, 57th Street, Honolulu, L.A. And in this project, Robert was teamed with a hotel developer, and they had a great design.
Right.
Fabulous design. I mean, that hotel feels like it's been there for 100 years, and it's been there for 10, not even.
Right. Sure.
But again, they got in a situation where the contractor they had wasn't really familiar with building hotels or hospitality. I was only involved because I was hired to do the Ago restaurant, which became La Conda Verde.
Yeah.
And, they're like – and Robert was a partner in – and Ago as well, and they had a couple Agos. They had L.A. and Vegas. And they're like, well, come in and build the restaurant. I'm like, well, I can, but the hotel's not ready. They're like, what do you mean it's not ready? I'm like, and I'd make a list. And we'd often have meetings at the Tribeca Grill. And they're like, there's no reason for me to send my team in here, build the restaurant. The hotel's not going to be ready.
No, thank you, Mr. De Niro. I'm not going to take your check.
Yeah.
Until
the time is right.
Right.
Yeah, I don't want it. I don't want to take his money and then the restaurant sit completed and not be able to generate revenue. I was like, why would you spend your money now? I just wouldn't do that to anybody. I wouldn't do it to myself. I wouldn't do it to a client.
And in an odd twist, when the restaurant did open, it didn't make any money anyway. The first one.
Well, yeah.
No, it didn't. That wasn't anybody's fault except that the restaurant operator.
Yeah. There was a operational glitch there, and that is operational team was based in L.A.
They never took the time. They never took the time to learn that New York is a city of neighborhoods.
Yeah.
I totally agree with you. Yeah. But you know what? Move away from that. But let's move again on the idea. Here's what I like, right? The idea you come in to fix a problem like that, Mr. Wolf, mm-hmm. right? And you have an hour in generics, right? Mm-hmm. You have time certain to fix it.
Yep.
How long did it take you to come in, pull your Mr. Wolf act, and get out?
Well, I mean, assessing the problem was very quick. I mean, I
just
could tell.
Just like Mr. Wolf does.
I could tell it was a disaster.
Got a dead guy in the car.
Yeah. To straighten it out took about 14 months, and 14 hard months. I mean, I spent a lot of personal time on that job site while running a $300 million business. But again, I wanted them to feel like they're my only client, my only customer. We put some of the best people we had on it, and we got it done, and the hotel is beautiful, and we, if you've been to the lower levels, they have the great spa, they have a great indoor pool.
Right.
It's an amazing project.
If you want to see the work that Brian Stiles and the Stiles Hospitality Initiative can do, I invite you all to go and have a drink at the Greenwich Hotel, which is on the corner of North Moore and Greenwich in New York. Just take a look. Take a feel. Ask for a tour, even though that's probably not their favorite thing to do. They'll do it for you because that hotel is a neighborhood establishment, and they really do enjoy showing it off. The subtleties that make it feel as if it's been there 100 years are the result of quality design and quality craftsmanship, both of which Brian manages.
Well, and listen, the management team there does a great job at running
absolutely.
The hotel.
Absolutely.
I mean, I've stayed there, and when you stay there, you feel special and it's comfortable.
And when you're here, you're special.
Yeah.
So when you're here on the business of the business
absolutely.
On the Heritage Radio Network, Brian, some practical advice for the people who are listening, or some education for the people who are listening. All right, in my experience, a construction budget is a fairy tale. Never seems to come close to what you budget. What's the difference today, and even 3 to 5 years ago, in why it's more expensive to build, particularly here in New York?
Well, I mean, if your budget's set up initially, if you don't set the budget,
you're a critical component.
Yeah, but you have to be realistic. I mean, anytime anybody goes out and starts their first restaurant, the few things they say is, I'm going to do it really cheap. I'm going to offer all my employees health benefits. I'm going to be a unique operator, and I'm also going to take time for myself. Well, none of those things ever come true in your first restaurant. You can't afford to pay your employees health benefits, especially today with what's going on.
Yeah.
And you end up hiring your cousin's, your mother's cousin's brother to build it because you don't have any money. You've borrowed money. So the first time is really, really hard to do it the way that you need to do it. But there's plenty of people do one and done and live a happy life. But, you know, we're mostly talking about guys who've done 20 restaurants.
Right.
Get the budget right. Today's world is, you know, you want to charge a lot of money for people to eat there. And not a lot. I shouldn't say a lot. You want to charge a good price for someone to eat at your restaurant. But in order for them to afford it, they need to make a decent wage. So each thing counteracts the other.
Of course. And you've got to build a quality kitchen. And you've got to build a system that allows for the transportation of the food efficiently.
But on the labor side, I mean, labor's where the construction costs get a little crazy.
Isn't that funny? Because that's where people lose their restaurants once they're open. Is on the labor side.
Right.
So continuing a theme, please.
So construction labor is expensive, but you know those same guys that are building it, you're hoping to come back to eat, and you hope that they can afford a $20 entree. Well, in order for them to make a $20 entree, they have to have a job that pays them decent wages. So it's a do loop.
There it is.
And so therefore you've got to realize that labor is expensive, so you need to figure out how to build your restaurant the most efficient way, more you can do off-site. Off-site labor is a lot cheaper than on-site labor in any world. In New York, where we have a lot of union stuff, the union rates in my life, I don't remember the unions ever taking a pay cut. Okay? there's not a GS rating for how many years you've been in.
Right.
You get out of the apprentice program, you become a journeyman, you make the same as a guy who's been there 40 years. So that's a hard thing for a restaurateur or for anybody to get over.
Right.
So the labor's expensive. So you need to make sure that you're not wasting time, that you're designing and building efficient systems, and that you are using your labor as best as possible. But you do want those guys to make a decent wage because you want them to come back.
Of course you do.
So, of course you do. I remember when the market crashed in 2008. And I was still doing well, and my wife would say, hey, you know, we did save money. And I'm like, why? We're doing fine. We need to spend money because if I don't buy my morning coffee, then that guy at the coffee shop doesn't go down the street and buy his lunch. And that guy who owns that cafe doesn't go out to dinner that night. So it's all connected. So it's got to be one universe.
You really are a patriot.
Absolutely.
From Bill Belichick all the way down to how you spend your money.
Well, that book. Who's your friend there that we met that wrote the book about being a patriot?
Oh my goodness! Right, Joe Grano.
Right,
yeah, that's right, Joe Grano from American Express. I am. I'm honored to be speaking with Brian Stiles of the Stiles Hospitality Initiative. Brian is walking us through the nuts and bolts, the guts of the design and construction in the restaurant industry. He's given us a couple of great takeaways, in my estimation. The one that's really sticking with me is because the industry itself, in every component, restaurant, hotel, and now we learn construction, all requires very, very close attention be paid to managing labor, being fair to labor, but managing labor, because labor, as we have learned over the course of 29 shows, is the biggest variable in any plan that the hospitality industry embraces. One of the things Brian does is help people evaluate how much labor how long that labor needs to last, how to engage the appropriate contractor who's got skilled and experienced labor, who's not reinventing the wheel when they're coming along. Before we head off the air today, all of you would-be restaurateurs, I hope, I know Brian's going to give you his contact information. I'm going to make him give you his contact information before we go. But I can tell you that that Brian will return your phone call. He'll return your email. He doesn't care whether you're opening a restaurant in the Bushwick section of Brooklyn or at 21st and Park or at 5th and 5th Avenue and 54th Street. I'm naming three or four areas where I know that I've seen Brian crawling through ductwork. Next time if we get Brian to have another beer, he's going to tell you about the craziest bastards that he's ever worked with.
Oh, there are plenty.
But this is not a gossip show. This is a business show. Brian, if we want to reach you, how do we reach you? Slowly.
On my website, Stys Hospitality, and Stys is STYS, no vowels. I'm Polish. hospitality.com is the best way. There is a contact page there. If you want to call my cell, it's 617-839-6181.
And please, if you're designing a restaurant, if you're building a restaurant, most importantly, if you're sinking money into a restaurant, I know that Brian has even consulted with investors of restaurants just to help them evaluate whether or not to put their money into a plan. So that's it for today. I had my good buddy Brian Stys with me. We had a nice cold beer. We watched a couple flirting outside the window here at Roberta's here in Bushwick. And I think what we're going to do now, Brian, is we're going to go evaluate whether or not the construction here at Roberta's can actually create a pizza that you and I can eat and enjoy for less than $50.
That'd be great.
All right. Phil Colicchio signing off on the business of the business with my buddy Brian Stys from the Stys Hospitality Initiative. Aloha. See you all next Wednesday. We got a cool show next week. I hope you'll tune in. Till then, if you're in New York or in the Northeast, enjoy this nice cool breeze we have outside. Talk to you later. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Phil.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.